It's Thursday, December 8th in Asia, and Wednesday the 7th here in Washington, and this is VOA's International Edition. I'm Michael Lippin. Just ahead, President-elect Donald Trump names his pick for U.S. ambassador to China, and Beijing calls that nominee an old friend. We'll find out how that could affect the U.S.-China relationship. We'll look into why some people see Trump's process of picking his government as a reality show. Major U.S. stock indexes hit more record highs, and the outgoing UN Secretary General reflects on his ups and downs in a VOA interview. It's all ahead on International Edition. U.S. President-elect Trump has decided on his next ambassador to China, and his nominee is Terry Branstad, a long-serving Republican governor of the Midwestern state of Iowa. Trump's transition team confirmed the nomination on Wednesday. Branstad has enjoyed a decades-old personal relationship with Chinese President Xi Jinping. The two first met in Iowa in the 1980s when the Chinese leader was then a young agricultural officer. Robert Daly is the director of the Washington-based Wilson Center's Kissinger Institute on China and the United States. I asked Daly what he makes of the Branstad choice.
Well, I haven't met Governor Branstad, so I do not speak from any personal experience. But my first response was that it looks like a fairly solid appointment in that you have a governor who knows the American system very well and can speak to the American system and the American values. You have an early Trump supporter who appears to be quite close to the president whose son ran the candidate Trump's Iowa campaign. And this is important for the Chinese because they need to know that whoever they're talking to can talk to the president and that their points have landed and that their messages have been delivered. This has long been a concern for China and remains a concern. It appears that he can do that. He also understands the importance of the trade relationship, particularly trade in agricultural goods, corn and soybeans from Iowa. And so all of that is positive. I think this is especially important because most foreign affairs Trump appointees seem to have a more hardline stance toward China on both the security and the economic fronts. And so having as an ambassador somebody with a history of trade cooperation and a more constructive view of the bilateral relationship, I think will be welcome.
How much will it help Branstad, the fact that the Chinese foreign ministry reacted to the news by saying Branstad is an old friend of China? How much will Branstad's long-running relationship with China's president help him to achieve that goal?
I would not put too much faith in that. It's a nice way to start. It's more than just icing on the cake to be known to them. But that will last until the Chinese give their first démarche expressing their extreme displeasure with a major American policy, at which point friendship won't enter into it. It isn't really credible that he and Xi Jinping are close friends. This is something that both sides will use initially to create a warm, positive atmosphere and to try to make things work well. But there's no reason to believe that this is a real friendship of any depth or meaning to either man, which can be drawn on for a well of sympathy when things get tough. It's largely symbolic. Again, it's a nice thing to be able to begin with, and I don't mean to be cynical about it, but it's just as it can't have been true that President Xi Jinping and President Obama rolled up their shirt sleeves and really got to know each other sort of guy to guy and had a personal relationship. This wasn't true, nor is it true that these are old friends. And the notion of old friend of China, on the one hand, it's intended purely in a friendly, positive way from the Chinese side, but it can be a bit of a two-edged sword in that old friends are not supposed to be critics, and ambassadors at times have to deliver extremely critical and unpleasant messages, and so the question will be, how much does friendship matter then? But overall, it sends an initially positive signal, deliberately or not. You know, the signal in calling with having the phone call with President Tsai of Taiwan, was that an intended signal to China? Was it deliberate or was it accidental? Is this signal of friendship deliberate or accidental? The fact is that we don't know, but it was received as a warm signal by the Chinese, and I think that their response is a positive sign.
Well, thank you very much to Robert Daly, director of the Kissinger Institute on China and the United States, for speaking to International Edition.
Thank you.
Well, it's time to check on what's buzzing online, and International Edition's social media reporter, Jiabi Li, is with me in the studio. Hi, Ji.
Hi, Michael.
What's trending today?
You know, I talked about the Time magazine's Reader's Choice for the Person of the Year Tuesday, and on Wednesday, the magazine announced its pick. U.S. President-elect Donald Trump is the 2016 Person of the Year, and the magazine's cover describes him as the President of the Divided States of America.
Divided States. Mm-hmm. I imagine that term generated some controversy.
Absolutely. So not surprisingly, some people are calling it a clickbait cover. Tom Stokes, a TV producer, replied to the American magazine's announcement on Twitter by tweeting, "Why produce this as Divided States of America? You're one of the many that fuels a fire of division with crappy statements like this." Now to that tweet, an apparent Hillary Clinton supporter replied, "Trump is hashtag not my president," and stressed that the Democratic candidate won the popular vote.
Well, I heard that Trump himself told U.S. TV that he was honored by this choice, but I think he also didn't like the term Divided States of America
that
much.
Yeah, he said that I didn't divide them. So,
right.
Yeah.
Well, what about other reactions that you've seen to this honor for Trump?
Yes, here's an interesting one. Republican strategist Anna Navarro tweeted, "It's hard to argue with the magazine's selection because Trump defied political gravity." But other people were less impressed because the magazine makes the U.S. president-elect its Person of the Year every 4 years. Still others emphasize that it's not really a compliment because it's given to the most influential person of that year, good or bad. Even Adolf Hitler was selected as a Person of the Year in 1938, and usually you don't want to be, you know, in the same category.
Maybe not all the time, but what else have you seen trending today?
Yeah, over in India, thousands are paying tribute to the Iron Lady of Tamil Nadu. Jayalalitha Jayaram entertained and also served as a politician in the South Indian state for more than half a century until she passed away from a cardiac arrest earlier this week. Michael?
Thank you very much to Jiabi Li. If you want to follow her on Twitter, her handle is at Jiabi Li and mine is at Michael_Lippin. Well, here are some of the top stories right now on voanews.com. Indonesia declares state of emergency after earthquake that killed at least 97 people in Aceh province. A Kenya NGO releases a report accusing Kenyan security forces of making dozens of people disappear since 2012. NATO chief urges allies to maintain sanctions against Russia. Pakistani plane crashes, killing all 47 on board. And Ghana awaits presidential and parliamentary election results. Expanded coverage of these stories and more on voanews.com. This is International Edition. Staying with the presidential transition, U.S. media say President-elect Trump has made two more choices for his cabinet. They say his pick to head the Department of Homeland Security is retired U.S. Marine General John F. Kelly, who is known as a tough-talking border security hawk. Reports also say Trump wants the next head of the Environmental Protection Agency to be Scott Pruitt, the Republican Attorney General of Oklahoma and a frequent legal critic of President Obama. Many of those under consideration for the president-elect's team have been appearing at his Trump Tower home and office for interviews in Manhattan in recent weeks. Why is this so unusual? My colleague Sarah Williams asked that question to Mark Rizel, a U.S. policy and government analyst at George Mason University.
It's a unique process, there's no doubt about that, and we have not seen a president-elect conduct a transition process like this before, a lengthy interview process of candidate after candidate for various cabinet positions. Now, to be fair, in the past, it has taken some considerable time for some presidents-elect to choose members of their staff and their cabinets. So the timing is not all that unusual. The fact that it's taking a while to name a Secretary of State, for example, or some other top officials is not out of the ordinary, but it's really the open process, the people coming to Trump Tower as though they're auditioning for the job. which has created kind of a media circus and made it seem like a reality TV event to many people, which is something, of course, that Donald Trump had done in his past.
Yeah, and certainly Trump he enjoys using Twitter. And there was a famous photo of him having dinner with Mitt Romney, who's one of the people being considered for Secretary of State. You know, and I believe they were having dinner in the Trump Tower. But yeah, there's certainly the optics of this. And also just recently, the other day, you had former Vice President Al Gore, who, of course, was once running for president back in 2000. He had a meeting with Trump's daughter, Ivanka, but I guess eventually Trump participated in that as well.
Yeah, that's exactly right. And we have to keep in mind that Donald Trump has always been a master of mass media. He's always been very, very good at drawing attention to himself and keeping himself before the public, you know, even before he, of course, ran for public office. And much of what he's doing right now in the transition process is very much an extension of what he has been doing for years. And, you know, the dinner with Mitt Romney, of course, that was a very, very public event. The continuous tweeting that he's been doing, for which he's received some substantial criticism because some have said that he gets his facts wrong and tweets information out and then has to either pull it back or just leave it as it is, unfactual. So, you know, again, Donald Trump was not a conventional candidate for the presidency, and he is not a conventional president-elect. And so whatever expectations people had coming into this process, based on how past presidents have come into the office of the presidency, I think simply don't apply to Donald Trump, and he's perfectly proud to be completely different than all of his predecessors.
And you've been listening to Mark Rozelle of George Mason University speaking with International Edition's Sarah Williams. In financial news, the U.S. S&P 500 Index and the Dow Jones Industrial Average climbed to all-time highs on Wednesday. International Edition's Jim Stevenson spoke with VOA's financial correspondent Jill Malandrino in New York and asked her what drove today's gains.
What's interesting is the tone is changing. We're seeing sectors like telecom, real estate, consumer discretionary, and tech leading the way, and they were the ones that were the laggards back in November. Financials, they're also continuing to perform well. Goldman Sachs has had a fantastic run. Wells Fargo just hit a 52-week high, and that's despite that PR disaster that it had a few months ago with the fake accounts. So we're really seeing strength across the board. Industrials and energy, they've been relative outperformers so far for the month of December. I also find it's interesting that the ETF that tracks bonds is also at session highs, and typically you see the inverse when equities are trading higher. So I'm curious to see how that plays out, but let's take a look at what's happening globally. Now, the Dow Jones made another all-time high today. This is the 12th new high since the election, which is 19 days ago, trading days, that is. The S&P has made only 5 new highs over this time, but it closed about a point away from its new high yesterday. So that momentum is continuing throughout the trading sessions. Not to be undone, the Russell 2000, which are small cap stocks, that continues to make new highs. And it's not just U.S. strength. Yesterday, the Russian index closed an all-time high. The French CAC, the German DAX closed at their highest point since December of last year. Nikkei is near 2016 highs, and the Euro Stoxx index breaking above downward sloping trend lines, which we haven't seen since early 2015. So this is a broad-based global rally, and it's another sign that the equity bull market seems to be alive and well with the surprise President-elect Trump win.
That was our business reporter, Jill Malandrino, in New York. Still to come on International Edition, we'll preview one of America's biggest music awards shows. This is VOA.
This is Science in a Minute.
Belgian scientists say data from NASA's Cassini mission has provided evidence of an ocean deep beneath the surface of Saturn's moon Dione. With this finding, Dione joins its siblings Titan and Enceladus, as well as Jupiter's moon Europa, in the group of moons having a subsurface ocean. The study authors say that gravity data gathered during recent flybys by Cassini suggests Dione's icy crust floats on an ocean several tens of kilometers deep, some 100 kilometers below its surface. The study also proposes that Dione's ocean surrounds a large rocky core. Study authors suggest interactions between the ocean and the moon's rocky core could have long provided the essential ingredients needed to host microbial life. I'm VOA's Rick Pantaleo.
This is VOA's International Edition with me, Michael Levin. At the end of December, UN Secretary General Ban Ki-moon will leave office after a decade at the helm of the world body. He recently sat down with VOA UN correspondent Margaret Bashir to reflect on his time as the world's top diplomat.
He has traveled the world trying to prevent and end conflicts, promote development, and lessen the effects of climate change. Along the way, he has met scores of world leaders, refugees, and victims of natural disasters. Ban says it will be up to historians to judge his legacy, but he points to the ambitious 17-point Sustainable Development Agenda to end poverty as one of his most important accomplishments.
I'm confident that by 2030, the older people will be in a much better way in living in a healthier, more prosperous, and more peaceful world. And that's my hope.
Ban also says he is proud of the Paris Climate Accord, which went into effect last month.
It required a lot of political mobilization, and it required forging a stronger partnership and raising the awareness of the government leaders and business leaders and civil societies.
Ban also has been praised for the UN's efforts to end the death penalty, improve women's rights, and fight violence and discrimination against the LGBT community. But his list of unfinished business runs long.
When it comes to continuing crisis in Syria and elsewhere, South Sudan, Yemen, Central African Republic, and elsewhere, we have to show unity of purpose and the solidarity for the people. Often, I have been shocked by the lack of empathy of some world leaders.
Ban, a native of South Korea, also is preoccupied with the mounting tension on the Korean Peninsula because of North Korea's repeated nuclear and ballistic missile tests. He tried to go to North Korea last year, but Pyongyang canceled the visit at the last minute.
It was a unilateral cancellation. I really tried to do whatever I can to contribute to, first of all, reduction of tensions on the Korean Peninsula and also promote the reconciliation between the two parts of Korea.
There has been much speculation about Ban's future. At 72, he is still full of energy and looks unlikely to change his workaholic ways. He has long been tipped to be a top contender in South Korea's 2017 presidential race. But recently, the country has been engulfed in a political crisis that could see the current president impeached if she doesn't resign, which could move the election forward. Ban says South Korea has resilient and mature democratic institutions, and he is confident it will come through the current crisis. As for a presidential run, he will only say that he is keeping his options open.
When I become a civilian, private citizen, then I will have to discuss this matter with the leaders of Korean society, my friends, my family.
Until then, he will keep everyone guessing. Margaret Bashir, VOA News, the United Nations.
And last item in our show today, the annual Grammy Music Awards are just a few months away. The 59th edition takes place on February 12th at the Staples Center in Los Angeles. The nominees for the U.S. music industry's biggest prizes were announced on Tuesday. For a look at the main contenders, International Edition's Lori London spoke with Entertainment Tonight's senior news editor, Jennifer Perez.
It's going to be the Adele versus Beyoncé Grammys. I mean, the two of them were both nominated for multiple awards, Beyoncé coming in on top at 9 nominations, and Adele with a total of 5. Some other front runners were Drake, Rihanna and Kanye West, who are all nominated for 8 Grammys, and then Chance the Rapper, who is the new up-and-comer artist. He came in with 7 nominations. So Album of the Year, Record of the Year, of course, both have Adele and Beyonce. Song of the Year, of course, Formation by Beyonce, Hello by Adele. So it's definitely going to be the two of these ladies up against each other. And some surprises, Demi Lovato actually has her first Grammy nomination. A lot of people were surprised by that. Justin Bieber has been nominated for 3. He was nominated for Album of the Year. And of course, a lot of people were surprised by that. And a couple snubs, Sia, she is walking away with 3 nominations, but nothing in the Album of the Year, Record of the Year, Song of the Year, or Best New Artist. But, you know, we do think she will be taking some home as well. Best New Artist, we're seeing Kelsea Ballerini. She, of course, is America's new favorite country music artist. And, of course, the Chainsmokers, the 2 EDM duo from New York, who have been around for years but have just made their name in mainstream music. You can't put the radio on nowadays without hearing one of their songs. And, of course, Chance the Rapper. So those 3 are definitely going to dominate the Best New Artist category, and it should be interesting to see who else takes more awards home that night.
We've got Beyonce and Adele really leading the pack here. Yeah. How did both of them do last year? Is this sort of a repeat of the favorites?
No, not at all. You know, of course, Adele won in 2008 for Best New Artist. I mean, she literally came out overnight, had her SNL performance, and then, you know, her hit song, and then won the Best New Artist, and her life really hasn't been the same. Now, she did take the last 3 years off to write her hit album, 25, and, of course, recover from throat surgery, and she had a baby. Mm-hmm. So we really haven't seen Adele in the past couple of years. It's also interesting to note, Beyonce, even though she does have 20 Grammy Awards already, she only has 10 on her own. The first 10 were with Destiny's Child, and this is the first time that she has been in one of the main 4. She's only won 1 Grammy in the top 4 categories for All the Single Ladies for Best Song of the Year. So it should be interesting to see which one of the ladies will win that night.
And that was Jennifer Peros of Entertainment Tonight speaking to VOA's Lori London. And taking us to the end of International Edition, we have one of those Grammy nominees for Best Record of the Year, Adele's Hello. Your director today was Tracy Carter, and the engineer was Carl Starling. I'm Michael Lippin in Washington. We'll see you next time. I'm supposed to heal you, but I ain't done much healing.
Hello. Next, an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
An ISIL suicide bomber recently detonated a truck filled with explosives at a roadside service station in Hilla, Iraq, killing nearly 80 people and injuring many more. The United States condemns in the strongest possible terms this outrageous terrorist attack. Many of those killed were pilgrims returning from commemorating the Shia observance of Arba'in in the city of Karbala. The annual rite is a commemoration of the martyrdom of Imam Hussein, a revered 7th-century Shiite figure. Millions of Shiites have flowed through southern Iraq in recent days for what may be the world's largest religious pilgrimage, larger even than the Hajj in Saudi Arabia. This pilgrimage has been a frequent target of Sunni extremist groups like ISIL and its predecessor, Al-Qaeda, in Iraq. The United States extends its deepest sympathies to the families of the victims, as well as to all of Iraq, for this cruel violence, which was clearly intended to stoke sectarian tensions. The United States remains steadfast in its partnership with the Iraqi people and government, and this attack only serves to strengthen American resolve in defeating ISIL. The U.S. extends its deepest condolences to the victims' families and friends. These murders are yet another example of ISIL's contempt for human life and its efforts to sow discord and division among the Iraqi people. The U.S. partnership with Iraq and its people, who serve on the front lines of this global fight, remains steadfast and unwavering. State Department spokesperson John Kirby said, "The United States is in close contact with Iraqi authorities, and we stand committed to supporting Iraqi security forces as they continue to take the fight to Daesh and bring to justice those responsible for these despicable crimes."
That was an editorial reflecting the views of the United States government.
If you have a comment, please write to Editorials, VOA, Washington, D.C., 20237, USA. You may also comment and view all our current editorials at the VOA Editorials homepage, www.voanews.com/editorials.